number 13, open public input. So, Art, you're first on this one. I don't have any more sheets yet. There are more coming. I'm going to do it again, three at a time. Heath Eichelis, Steve Franzen. Go ahead. You're up first, sir.
Well, thank you. Merry Christmas, folks. I'm pretty unprepared other than as soon as I found out that you guys were going to be in town, I thought it was a good opportunity for me to come. Usually I'm out fishing for blackmouth, and that's been closed in December for a couple of years. I think what finds me here today is a term called inspirational dissatisfaction as a sport fisher. I've been fishing here for over 30 years. The first fishing trip I went on was on the Skagit River with a new acquaintance. And it was about this time of year. And I said, what is that stench? And what it was all the chum that were dead on the shore bank. You know? And I thought, oh, gosh, okay. But 30 years forward, I went fishing about a week and a half ago with a good friend of mine on the Skagit. And there was no stench. That concerns me, okay, for a lot of reasons. From what I've learned since then. I was at a meeting last month, I think, and Steve Stout mentioned, one of the fisheries guys mentioned that they need the biomass up there, you know, for the Chinook and all the other fish later on. So that bothers me. There's so many things that bother me as a sport fisherman that bring me in here, and I'm just here really to say what's on my mind. I look at... I'm a business owner too, so I look at what I spend to catch a fish, and I look at the salmon being a resource of all the people in Washington State, and you're one of the bodies that manage that resource. And if it's a resource for everybody in the state, fisher people, non-fisher people, that would mean to me that the commission should, the commissions in the future should look at possibly bang for the buck. You know, what is somebody on the east side of Washington getting out of this resource, the whole state? If I'm spending $50 a pound for fish, I would think that pumps more into the Washington state economy, because every one of those dollars is spent right here. It's spent buying a boat. Well, that's not even, that $50 probably isn't even including capital depreciation, by the way. If I throw that in there, it might be $80 a pound. But I would like you to, you know, in the future, think about that when you're making your decisions about, you know, the economical values of that resource to the state. Thank you.
Thank you for coming in. Heath?
Good morning again. So three issues, including some positive ones, which I always like to do talk about. So the first would be, I want to, I know there was some testimony yesterday about Puget Sound crab and what occurred this year in terms of the fishery. I don't know what was discussed at the Fish Committee, but you received quite a few emails in the fall about an interest in seeing a change to the reporting rule on the commercial side to prevent that from happening again. And I hope, I don't know if you've talked about that, if there's plans to do that, but I really would ask that occur, because we just can't manage fisheries that way. That is not orderly fisheries. Number two, I want to talk about a positive project recently funded by CCA's Building Conservation Trust, which was planting of native oyster, Olympia oysters throughout southern Puget Sound, including near Penrose State Park, Commissioner Anderson, and Kopachuk State Park, put in 300 bags of Olympia oyster shells, which is part of a bigger project project with the UW Tacoma, looking at not only restoration of that habitat, but also improvements of water quality and what can happen with some of those oysters. So that's an exciting project that's underway. We had volunteers that helped distribute that 300 bags, which was part of tens of thousands of oysters that were distributed. Finally, I want to remind you about the King of the Reach Live Capture Derby, which Commissioner Graybill is very familiar with. This year, we had 100 boats, 400 anglers fishing off of those boats that caught 1,546 wild Chinook that were then used in the native brood stock at the Priest Rapids hatchery through Grant PUD and WDFW. It's a huge success, and I'll tell you, the release mortality rate on these fish is ridiculously low, less than 1%, and that includes bringing these fish on board, putting them in nets, aerated tanks, taking them to a tanker truck all the way to the hatchery. Now, granted, fall Chinook are a hardy fish compared to some other fish, but I think it's a great example of how we can use recreational fisheries to be really selective, which is a tool not only to catch wild fish when you need them for broodstock, but again, as a tool for catching hatchery fish that we need to catch while releasing the wild fish to get back to the spawning grounds to comply with ESA. So we'd like to find more opportunities for these kinds of live capture derbies, I'll call them, across the state. There's no reason why we can't be doing more of them. So those are my comments for now. Thank you.
Mr. Graybill?
Thank you, Nathan. Thank you for bringing some good news to the table. And also, as you mentioned, I'm familiar with the King of the Reach Derby. And that has increased the broodstock needs tremendously. I think the first year we brought 300, and it's grown incrementally. And I encourage the department to look at areas where we could use better broodstock numbers, because this has proven to be very effective, extremely low mortality. It's fun. It's a social gathering and a very effective fishery, and really makes a significant contribution to the hatchery in that area. And it's a joint effort between the department, the PUD, CCA. All of those good things are happening around it, and I think there's other areas where we could apply that same energy. Thank you for CCA on that. Yeah.
Thanks.
Commissioner Baker.
I want to echo Commissioner Graybill's note, and thank you, Heath, for King of the Reach. But I also want to point out that, Commissioner, I went to King of the Reach this year, and I was on Commissioner Graybill's boat with two or three very, very experienced anglers and guides, and I was the only one who caught a fish, and I was the only one who got a bite. So I would just like to encourage all of us to, this was a fun thing, and camping the night before was fun, and having the Fish and Wildlife big tanker truck up there was fun. It is a good thing to do, and I completely agree.
Well, thank you. Commissioner Graybill's gone awfully quiet over there. But
I'd just like to make one comment and perhaps put a placeholder out there. I think this is probably the first time, maybe the second time, I've heard about this oyster planting issue, and I find that quite interesting. Maybe at some point in time, Director, we could get a short briefing on the water quality benefits of that. There might be something there that some other people would choose to get involved in. Seems logical, so thank you for that.
Yeah,
Steve, thank you. Steve?
Good morning, Commissioners, Director, and Deputy. I'm Steve Franson. You said, what, him again?
Yes. Just to remind you that sport fishing does matter.
I think after the many public comments yesterday, we just might be getting your attention to this. I want the Skagit steelhead season to continue again, whether you get your supplemental budget request from the legislature or not. I still believe that the Skagit fishery is more important than a multitude of other actions the department funds that return little or no conservation or recreation, which ought to be your highest priorities. Director, you said you didn't have enough money to fund monitoring of the fishery, yet you turned around a week later and found the money to fund two top-tier administrative department positions, including the one who negotiates behind the closed doors with the tribes and then comes out of the closed-door meetings to announce, guess what, further closures of sport fishing seasons.
like the closure of the Stillaguamish River for 3.5 months, claiming it's necessary for conservation when in fact it's necessary because you have no leverage in those co-manager negotiations. And you closed the Chehalis River this past season to all sport fishing because of low spring Chinook abundance, which are always in low abundance. But the first time you actually closed the river over it. In addition to the Skagit steelhead season, don't close the Stillaguamish River again for the 3.5 months in 2020, even though this measure is already in the regulation booklet that extends through June 30th. We both know that the Chinook conservation claim was a ruse and that the real reason is because the tribes forced it. Stop using conservation as a reason for closing sport fishing when it isn't. You ought to know by now, we check up on these things. Push back. We know that you know that it is possible to have a stilly season for summer steelhead and sea run cutthroat with no significant adverse impact to Chinook. So do it. I want this because sport fishing matters. I also want the Chehalis River open for its normal and usual game fish season with the usual prohibition of targeting spring Chinook. Again, because the sport fishing matters. The department says it values transparency. And if that's true, then you have some very serious public relations work to do. Inform us of the benefits of closed-door co-manager meetings that produce new sport fishing season closures, with the department claiming it's necessary for conservation, when that is flat-out untrue. Inform us of the efforts the department has made these last 4 years to secure its own ESA permit from NIMS to escape tribal coercion. And if you've made no such efforts, then how about tell us why and how and why having the tail wag the dog benefits sport fishing in both the near and the long terms, because sport fishing does matter. Now, having said that...
One sentence, Steve. One sentence.
Long sentence. I lobby the legislature for the $2.5 million identified in the supplemental budget request for monitoring salmon and steelhead seasons, because sport fishing matters. But I'm not going to lobby for the entire $26 million because you keep throwing sport fishing under the bus. Stop doing that.
Thank you, Steve. Thank you. Next three, Bob Harriman. Wait a minute. We got two Bob Harrimans here.
Yeah, different topics.
I had four.
No, you don't get that many. So, Bob Harriman, Chris Johnson, and Charles Sullivan. How many did you turn in, Bob?
Turned in one for every issue.
Well, they're all the same.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the commission and Director Dennis.
They're all on 13.
Allowing open testimony. First part of my testimony, what I'd like to do is thank the department and the commission for passing the combo sportsman's license. Our club had worked on that clear last spring and sent a letter of appreciation if you would do a combination license like that. And we were hoping to hopefully raise funds for the department through that, and it will. And you did it, and we appreciate it. It's a best way to sell a whole license deal to the sportsmen's or the sportspersons of this state, and I appreciate it. The other thing I'd like to comment on is another way to raise money for the department, and that is to go to a two deer tag system in the state of Washington. And that would basically be an east side tag and a west side tag. That doesn't mean you have to choose either one. It means you get to harvest two deer. We don't have a shortage of blacktail on the west side of the mountains. And this would create a similar system that most states have. Most states that have multi-species deer have a license for each one of those deer. In our state, the east side primarily is whitetail and mule deer. And you can leave that as one license for that, but add another license, which would be a west side tag, for our blacktail. All different category of habitat, all different way they're managed. And talking to multitudes of hunters, they would appreciate this and would be willing to pay an extra tag for that. Also talking to staff from the department, there hasn't been a realized shortage of blacktail forever on this side of the mountains. So there's another idea that we like to push, and it gives an opportunity for the commission and the Department of Wildlife to make some money. And that only benefits just the hunting person. The economics of the store, the economics of choosing a weapon and buying all those weapons, it just gets into multitudes of something that would be very grateful by us users. The other thing I'd like to add is another weapon to be legal for the use of shooting turkeys. And I'm going to give you a little bit of history. At 19 and only married 2 years, I had a car accident whereby I hit a car head-on with a motorcycle. You can imagine who came out on the short stick of things. Anyway, I ended up walking on canes and crutches for 25 years before they would give me a knee joint. At that time, our club and a club in Spokane promoted handgun hunting in the state of Washington. And we eventually got those rules put in, and I was able to hunt because it's awfully hard to carry a rifle and do a bow and all that kind of thing. So a handgun came in very special. I have since then harvested many animals because this commission and the Wildlife Department passed that rule. For that same reason and others, we'd like to see a handgun shooting shot. So it'd be like a miniature shotgun, but it's legal, and to be added as a weapon. And this would help people with handicap situations, but it also, now that the department has passed a little more liberal rules in the fall hunting time with turkeys, and I'm very appreciative of that, too.
Bob, we need to wrap up.
Okay. So with that note, what I'd like to say, it also gives an opportunity for a rifle or a muzzleloader guy to carry a pistol along his site and have the opportunity to shoot a turkey within a short distance. So, thank you very much.
Thank you, Bob. I want to just let you know, you turned in four under this one agenda, and we just don't have the time to take four items from one individual. So,
we got the two most important ones. That's fine. I appreciate it.
If you want to send an email or a letter in regarding these other comments, that we would more than welcome that.
We will be doing that. Okay. And thank you very much, Commissioner.
Excuse me, I think Commissioner Thorburn has a question or comment.
Comment. Thank you, Mr. Harriman. Those are both very interesting suggestions, and I would just like to ask that they be taken under consideration. It may not work. It may take a little bit more than just the next pamphlet that may be for our three-year update. I think they're both, especially the turkey one, coming from the east side, are very interesting and should be considered.
Thank you, Commissioner. We will add those to our list of things to consider in our three-year package. Up front, I do have some concerns. I recognize that blacktails are not a challenge right now, but the folks who are killing a blacktail and stopping now would have the opportunity to also buy a whitetail and mule deer tag, which we do have some of those herds that are not doing well. So that does not mean we won't take it full consideration. That's just my knee-jerk reaction.
Thank you. Chris?
Hi, my name's Chris Johnson. I live in Ferndale. I'd like to thank you all for being here today. First of all, I'd like to say that I support Steve France in his comments. Secondly, I want to talk about salmon and steelhead management. At the beginning, hatcheries, promised an unlimited supply of salmon. And to do that, they employed an agricultural and industrial model. And they became, and still are, a substitute for conservation and habitat. Salmon and steelhead spent the millennia developing life histories to thrive in their natal streams. Barry Lopez is quoted as saying, "Diversity is a condition necessary for life. Diversity creates the biological tensioning that makes life in general vigorous and sustainable. It's diversity that ensures perpetuity. The loss of diversity, on the other hand, threatens all life with extinction." And I would say that hatchery, reliance on the hatchery model, facilitates that loss of diversity. Willis Rich, 80 years ago, a Stanford professor, stated, "We need to make the individual population the unit to be treated in management." With all the news about the southern resident orcas as of late, we defaulted to the hatchery industrial model as an answer. And that may or may not be appropriate in the short term, but in the long term, it's not a viable option. Management agencies should adopt river and population-specific management goals for all wild salmon and steelhead populations. They should develop escapement targets for wild populations to egg disposition and smolt production goals and monitor for compliance. Develop and protect habitat that supports holding, spawning, and rearing habitat, and monitor life history diversity as an indicator. Allow no interbreeding with hatchery fish. Advocate for native diversity in all forms in all wild salmon and steelhead streams. I believe we are at a crossroads when it comes to salmon and steelhead. We need to ask ourselves a question. Which path will we take? The one that's contained in the genes of wild salmon, or the one that is in the altered genes of hatchery fish? If the answer is the wild, we must quickly change our management status quo. Thank you.
Thank you, Chris. Charles?
Thank you. I'm supposed to be in a soccer game, but I got canceled, so I'm not as prepared as Chris or Steve. But I'm here to talk about the Skagit steelhead catch and release season in the spring. And we've had it the last year and a couple weeks. In that time, I've got to fish it all the time instead of going to BC or Oregon or someplace else to fish. Those dollars stayed right here in Washington State. It is one of those fisheries that does not require hatchery. It is, in fact, a fishery that we monitor at an individual river level, just as Chris was talking about. And recently, it seems as though, to some extent, it's being held hostage for other budget reasons, right? So the cynic in me says what's happening is the department saying, well, we have this group of people who will show up to meetings, they'll write letters, they succeed at things. We would like them to do that for us so that we can get the funding that we need. I'm not saying you don't need the funding, but I think it's a cynical way of going about things to put it on our backs as the anglers that fish this season, because as opportunities have reduced all over the west side or even just in this area from blackmouth to the summer Chinook season getting cut back to just July, there's got to be monitoring money there somewhere that isn't being used in those fisheries. And it just seems cynical to me that at this point we're going to say, now, you guys who figured out a way quite often away from even the department to negotiate with the tribes and come up with an agreement with the tribes, something that's pretty gosh darn hard here on the west side, we're going to take the successful people, the people who are able to do that, and make them lobby for our funding. Now, to be sure, you'll probably get your letter from us, right? It's really important to me. I got to fish my kid last year. But that doesn't make it right. And I think that it's something the department should really look at immediately is where can you find those funds for this fishery. The last thing is, with regards to the amount of money it takes, it does seem like an excessively monitored fishery. I mean, you just went over the Columbia River stuff, and we have nets in the river, and it seems as though bang for your buck, you're not paying nearly for the monitoring down there or anywhere else that you are for a bunch of mostly guys with fly rods and barbless hooks that don't even put, for the most part, fish in boats. You know, so the amount of money that we spend, I don't know what that helicopter is doing. I think you could probably relook at the way in which we monitor it. I think even after 1 year of data, you probably don't need the helicopter at whatever $1,000 an hour. So thank you for your time.
Thank you, gentlemen, for your comments. Last two individuals are Alan Chapman and Shannon Morrigan. Alan Chapman, welcome.
Good morning. My name is Alan Chapman. I am decompressing from 30 years of salmon management and restoration. I'm sort of carrying out the path developed by Randy Kinley, which was getting fish to catch. It's all about getting fish to catch. You can't get back to the nice days when there were no people around and there was lots of fish. So we need to find some way to balance the two. I am working in a number of venues now. I'm on the Whatcom CD as a supervisor. I am working in the Fishers Caucus in the WIRA 1 planning unit, which is trying to balance the needs of agriculture, fisheries, and other water users. Looking at a harvest target comparable to the mid-80s, which was supported primarily from hatcheries, which were reduced to about 25% of their production as a result of the ESA concerns. We are suggesting the only way we can get to those levels is through hatchery production. We can't just do hatchery production. We have to start on a course of habitat improvements that will increase the natural production to the point that you will allow access to the hatchery production. One of the problems we have locally is when people talk about habitat, it's sort of everywhere all the time. It would be very useful to use the technical expertise of the department working with the tribal co-managers to prioritize some of the habitat issues. There's an awful lot of effort, time and effort spent in permitting various little pieces of water which may or may not have a great significance in salmon production. And we need to decide and prioritize which salmon or which fish we're trying to recover, because I'm on a habitat review panel and they won't tell us habitat for what. Habitat for everything, but there's also habitat for people, and that's one of the things the environmental side has to be balanced with the fact that people need those goods and services, and you just have to be aware of the impacts of the human population on those goods and services so you don't have any unintended consequences. I think that basically wraps up the comments. What I'd like to see the department do is to provide more guidance to those of the general population and where the priorities lay with respect to in-stream habitat buffers and all of that. And in Whatcom County, I think we've got issues with water, and whether they are seasonal or annual, it's difficult to determine. Thank you.
Hey, Alan, nice to see you again. And glad you are staying involved, and I think we might have another assignment for you. We do have a new Region 4 director. I don't know if you met the gentleman. He's in the back.
I have worked with him for a number of years.
But staying retired is not an option. And good to see you, and let's continue this dialogue. Thank you.
Good. Thank you.
Any other questions? Shannon?
Well, I got on the right part of the agenda this time. Shannon Moore again. We recruited Alan Chapman into our Fisheries Caucus as we deal with our water problems here in Whatcom County. And as everybody knows, salmon need water. Otherwise, we're not going to have many salmon without the correct quantity and quality of water. So I want to follow up on my discussion about Samish yesterday that I was unable to, didn't have the time. What I want to bring to the commission's attention is that there's an enormous amount of eelgrass prairie in and around Samish, probably in the range of 1,000 acres of eelgrass prairie. This is wonderful habitat for juvenile Chinook. And additionally, what I also want to mention, and I've been looking at the water for a long time, there's huge biomass of anchovy that seems to be increasing in population to the point where when you shut your boat at the dock in the harbor in Bellingham, the anchovy jump out of the water and on the dock. Metering in when I was fishing for very few Chinook down in Samish, I would meter to see if I could find fish, and with my electronics, I could see huge, huge haystacks of anchovy, and Chuckanut Bay all the way down the Chuckanut shoreline, out into Bellingham Bay, there's anchovy everywhere. So the point I'm trying to make here, let's bump that production up in Samish to close to historical levels. The wild food is there for both wild fish, wild Chinook, and hatchery production, not to mention every other salmon that wants to jump in the chow wagon. So as I said before yesterday, we have some real issues with water at the Samish hatchery. We've got deferred maintenance that needs to be attended to. The Samish is one of the oldest hatcheries in the state of Washington. I think it was started at statehood. So we need more salmon swimming around in the water. Can we get with the business at hand to feed the orcas, provide the need for sportsmen, and also small fishing families here in Whatcom County? Thank you.
We have one more latecomer, Rob Larson.
Thank you for taking me right at the end on this. I had to say something. Nobody has, and thank you to all of you.
It's a subject, Rob, that's near and dear to our heart, so I think you might get a response.
Okay. So one of the biggest things, I hear about hatchery production, I hear about wild fish, and I hear everything about putting more fish in habitat. But the biggest thing that we have that we're facing in the Puget Sound and in Washington right now is benefits. And I know that because I've been to North Falcon meetings, I know there's some things going, but I don't think that we've made it the priority that it needs to be. We're spending literally millions and millions of dollars on all the other things that have been talked about, and nobody here today talked about management of benefits. And I think we really need to get, and I'm sure there's some things being done that I'm not aware of, but I think that this commission needs to direct more effort into the real cause of the reduction. And if you look at seals in Puget Sound and the Salish Sea, you know, roughly 4,000 seals when the Marine Mammals Protection Act was passed. Now, roughly 80,000. And you look at those, they're there day in and day out. They're eating smolt, they're eating herring, they're eating the adult fish off our lines when they return. They follow you around like a pack of wolves when you're on the water. And I just wanted to say, can we please put more effort on benefits? That's it.
Thank you. All right. Thank you all. We're moving.